It's the Pope Francis Gambit edition of Radio Free Thinker. This week, a rant about Harper's book burning, as well as Pope Francis Gambit to re-energize the Catholic Church. Let's begin episode 239.
It's time for Radio Free Thinker, the show that applies skepticism and critical thinking to everyday issues. The place where reason and reality cross sword, politics, religion, economics, and of course, science. Now let's get ready to be skeptical.
The cosmos is also within us. We're made of sparks. We are aware of the cosmos and know itself.
Across the sea of space, the stars are others. We have traveled this way before, and there is much to be learned.
Hello and welcome. I am Don, your political scientist and skeptical philosopher. This week, my rant is about yet another front on Harper's war on science. 7 of 9 of our world-famous Department of Fisheries and Oceans, DFO, libraries were closed in the autumn of 2013. This was ostensibly to reduce cost. The government pledged to digitize the contents of these libraries to ensure no intellectual property was lost. In the modern information age, digitized information not only makes it easier to store, allows more of it to be stored, but also makes it more accessible, at least in theory. If this is where the story ended, may ask, what's the rant? Well, it is coming to light that only a fraction of the contents of these libraries have been electronically copied. It seems only 1 in 20 books were converted. Some have been transferred to other libraries. Most were given away for free to anyone who walked in and just took them off the shelves. And a large number were to be burnt or are burnt or at least sent to landfills. I've yet to confirm the book burning part, but it does add a touch of historical resonance. The government claimed libraries were not used, but based this conclusion on the number of people who asked for help. Let's remember, these are largely academic resources used by people who know their way around the library. Not likely much help was needed. I suspect it was the only measure they could find that seemed low enough to support their political agenda. Okay, that was a little partisan, and I want to make a clarification. Much of this rant is centered on a report from the TAI, a center-left publication, and based on their interviews with scientists working with or for the DFO. I have corroborated the central themes, closure, dispersals, and other things, but have yet to be able to confirm it in its entirety. That said, Harper's government has a history of this kind of stuff, so I'm willing to give the report the benefit of the doubt. The report stated that a number of scientists interviewed could not understand why the libraries were being closed at all. The cost savings would only be in the order of about $400,000 a year in a budget of almost $2 billion, and that, to quote, most saw in the actions a political agenda by the Harper government to reduce the role of government in Canadian society, as well as the use of scientific evidence in making policy. One interviewee explained how the system works. The library itself is not actually run by DFO, but by Information Management and Technology Services. This took over about 2009. IMTS operates under a corporate business model. Under this model, one sector of government sells its services to another sector of government with the objective of providing the least amount of service for the largest possible service fee. This would seem to be a bad business model for running a government department that has the prime objective of long-term public good, giving the public the best possible return on their tax dollars across all sectors of government through working cooperatively. Getting back to Harper's agenda. In isolation, this would be conjecture and perhaps conspiracy thinking, but couple that with the fact that the government has shut down a number of research groups related to this content, most infamously the Experimental Lakes Area, the Hazardous Material Information Review Commission, and the DFO's entire contaminant research program. There's also been much reduction in funding to Freshwater Institute and the Center for Offshore Oil and Gas and Energy Research. To bring it home, that last one, also known as Cougar, is a group that would research into things like offshore oil spills and environmental impact of oil shipping. You know, that thing they're planning to do in northern BC to ship Alberta oil to Asia, Northern Gateway. The one where they promise a, quote, world-class response to any oil spill. Hard to have any kind of response when you cut the funding to one of the main research entities focused on that oil spill issue. And those works that are transferred to other libraries, access becomes much more difficult. scientists or the public will no longer be able to walk into a local DFO library, scan their shelves for a pertinent book, and grab it. No, now they will have to know what they want ahead of time, make an interlibrary loan, time and effort many will not likely go to, thus making scientific research much more difficult. To quote acclaimed Dalhousie University biologist Jeff Hutchings, it is always unnerving from a research and scientist perspective to watch a government undermine basic research. There are many materials online, but just as many books and materials that are not. The idea that you can send an email to Ottawa and get a book somewhere down the road is a myth. The idea that all requests will be honored also won't happen. He goes on to say that from a science and research perspective, these closures will have no positive impact on the quality of research, but they will have a negative impact. Losing libraries is not a neutral act. Hutchings saw the library closures fitting a larger pattern of, quote, fear and insecurity within the Harper government, quote, about how to deal with science and knowledge. He sees a pattern: the closing of research groups, cutting of funding for environmental research, the muzzling of scientists that we've talked about here many times before on Radio Free Thinker, the near abandonment of climate change research. And although Harper is not as bad as Australia's new Prime Minister, who in a 2010 rally stated, "The climate change argument is absolute crap. However, the politics are tough for us because 80% of the people believe climate change is a real and present danger." Harper said last year, "Canada applauds the decision of Prime Minister Abbott to introduce legislation to appeal Australia's carbon tax." Australian businesses are also lobbying the government to loosen, or at least not tighten, greenhouse regulations to ensure maximum fossil fuel extraction. They have dirty coal, we have the tar sands. In this, they have both stated that nothing major needs to be done. Harper is just ensuring that there is not the science to contradict his policies. Infamously, Harper abandoned the Kyoto Protocols, which called for a 6% reduction in CO2 based on 1990 numbers. He pulled out of his arse a 17% reduction based on 2005 numbers as an alternative. But that translates to a level 20% higher, assuming my math is correct, higher than 1990 levels. All these things indicate that the Harper government strongly regards environmental science as a threat to unfettered resource exploitation. A recent Sunday editorial in the New York Times said, "This is more than an attack on academic freedom. It is an attempt to guarantee public ignorance. It is also designed to make sure nothing gets in the way of Northern Resource Rush, the feverish effort to mine the earth and the oceans with little regard for environmental consequence." One last note. A number of interviewed scientists spoke anonymously because they feared that their funding or other government support could be hurt if their names were connected with their concerns that they were eager to share. Remember our report on loyalty oaths to the government and not to the nation? Here you see how it has come home to roost. Thanks to our electoral system, we cannot stop Harper's dismantling of the government, of science. But we sure as hell can raise a stink about it. Make sure everyone knows what he's doing. The saddest part of my research into this is the absence of coverage by the mainstream media. Even the CBC barely covered the story of the closures, let alone the impact and the follow-up about the trashing of government-funded research. As Harper's arrogance grows, his disrespect for Canada and Canadians, beyond the business class and the moneyed elites, has become blatant and stark. But cracks are beginning to show, and if and when criminal charges are laid regarding the Duffy scandal, mayhaps the mighty Harper may be kicked out of his own party. Regardless, never forget 2015.
Subscribe to the Radio Free Thinker podcast and take it on the go and download previous episodes. Subscribe via iTunes or at radiofreethinker.com. Remember to like us on Facebook and follow us on Twitter at CITRRFT. If you have any questions, comments, or thoughts to share with us, email at info@radiofreethinker.com. That understanding empowers you.
Our main topic is going to be about Pope Francis. But before we have that conversation, I thought a blast from the past may be interesting. It was exactly 300 days ago that Jorge Mario Bergoglio became Pope Francis. This is what Radio Freethinker then had to say about him.
New Pope. That's the name of this segment here. We got a new Pope, but is he a better Pope, or is he the same old Pope? Is he just another Pope in wolf's clothing? Is he going to Pope any better than the last Pope?
I saw one of the best cartoons ever. So people who may or may not be aware, one of the rituals that Catholics do is they have incense, and they sort of wave the incense around, and they have a picture of the new Pope waving the incense saying, "I just can't get rid of this old man stink." That was funny.
Yes.
On a more respectful note.
Yes, well, respectful for us. The retirement of Ratzinger left, of course, a vacancy at the top of the Catholic Church ladder, and they have elected a new Pope, Jorge Mario Bergoglio, I think, who has taken the name of Francis. Now, this is interesting for a couple of reasons, because he is, one, first, the first non-European Pope, and he's also the first Jesuit Pope.
Now, he is the a bishop from Argentina.
Yes.
And yes, I technically is born in Argentina, but both his parents are Italian. So I suspect, I don't know this, and I am being a pain in the butt as far as being picky about this, but technically, if you are the, you know, second generation, he may even be first, I'm not sure where he was born, but it's hard to say that he's from South America any more than it's like me saying I'm Native American because I was born in Canada, but really.
Well, no, I mean, he was born in Argentina. He did spend his entire life there. So, I mean, he's as Argentinian as most Argentinians.
I think a lot of Argentinians would argue with that.
Well, I mean,
how many times have we sat here and we've argued when you sit there and you say, why do we let all these... No, sorry. No, you've never said that. But, I mean, we have a lot of people who are first or second generation immigrants to this country. And, I mean, I'm not saying that's a bad thing. But some people say, well, you're not really one of us until you've been here for five or six generations at least. So,
if you go back five or six generations, no one is going to be Argentinian. I mean, at a certain point, you're going back like 500 years.
No, five generations is like... 200 years, if that?
Well, I don't know.
Each generation is about 30 years.
Well, it depends on what you mean by generation, then.
Yes.
But anyway, like I said, I think he is the first non-European pope. He's also the first Jesuit pope. And much has been made about him not being a European, which I think is interesting because, as we've talked about on the show before, Europe is no longer a power base for the Catholic Church. So this decision seems to make a bit more sense. South America is one of the largest Catholic populations in the world, and as we've talked about before, places like Africa and Asia are sort of growing domains for the Catholic Church as opposed to shrinking domains like Europe.
Yeah, I think I heard an interesting stat. They were commenting that about 40% of Catholics are from South America, but 60% of cardinals come from Europe.
Yeah. Well, again, generational gap thing going on there. So there's been some discussion of whether or not this new pope is any better or worse than the old pope. Now, admittedly, it is hard to top Ratzinger in terms of being terrible. But that being said, this new pope is not without controversy. So there have been some claims, some unsubstantiated claims, nevertheless, that he collaborated with the dictatorship in Argentina, even suggesting that he played a role in the kidnapping of two priests by the government. Now, these claims were never actually brought to trial, and aside from the claims of the priests, there actually is no evidence. So, it's basically hearsay.
Well, yes and no. So, you're right. The specific claim you're making, I would put to hearsay. But he's doing one of the things, and this, I was listening to a podcast just before he came into the studio today, that says that maybe this is a good point for him. In Argentina, he was a, I think he was a bishop, but he wasn't a high, he wasn't a high-ranking authority, but he was not a low-ranking authority in Argentina during the junta. And a lot of bad things were going on. And there's always this sort of tension as to, do I stand up and say something, and then they cart me off and I die, or do I sit back and kind of hold my tongue and hope to do the best that I can for those people around me? And he suffered through a lot of this sort of angst, same way sort of that a lot of people did in Europe during the Nazis, right? Mm. So, and I'm not condemning him for that. But, I mean, he was kind of implicated in the sense that he didn't speak up and he didn't say anything at the time. But where the hope lies is that after the junta had disappeared and he became the leader of the Catholics in Argentina, from what I just heard, he went out and he said, sorry, you know, it was a horrible thing. We should have done more. We didn't do as much as we could. We're really, really sorry about that. And one of the things that may be a bit of light for Francis is that they're hoping that maybe he can take this sort of maricopa that he did for that, where he did kind of have some personal guilt, and maybe apply that to the main Catholic Church with the whole pedophilia and that sort of thing.
Yeah.
Where most accounts says he's got no worries in that way, unlike Ratzinger.
Well, the thing is, he was he's at least right now is known for being more willing to face apologies. He's not the kind of hardline, I'm going to draw a line in the sand and never cross a type person. That being said, he is a Catholic and he is going to say stupid, really stupid things. So, for example, on the subject of abortion and euthanasia, the Pope has called them part of a culture of death. He has opposed distribution of free contraceptives in Argentina, which is ironic since he also wants to combat poverty. And one of the big correlations between poverty in these places, parts of the world, is lack of access to contraceptives.
I'm sorry to do this, Ethan. It's Argentina, not Tinia.
That's what I'm saying.
No, you're saying Tinia.
No. Anyway, in Argentina, he also called same-sex marriage, quote, devil's work. So, not exactly a nice guy, but perhaps a little bit nicer than Ratzinger. On the subject of the sort of sexual abuse scandals, he, I think, has at least led a little bit better in maybe a more progressive way. He has sort of not tried to kind of hide the pedophiles. He's said some relatively hopeful things and made a few remarks that seem to be a breath of fresh air in that respect, but still lagging behind the rest of the world in almost every other respect. So we'll have to see. Time will tell ultimately if this Pope turns out to be, you know, better.
Well, again, and I don't mean to ambush Ethan, I just happened to listen to a podcast before we came here. It was actually interesting, some of the things that they had mentioned about him, and I'll try not to be too long about this, but that one of the reasons why they pick him, because he was a reformer. Now, reformer in the Catholic context is not what we think of. So as you say, it's not like he's going to say, hey, abortion's okay, gay people, hey, we love you all, that sort of thing. But you do have the idea of the pedophile. But other things, and we've mentioned on the show before, the financial system and the money of the Catholic Church is considered to be very, very corrupt. And they were hoping that he's going to be a clean broom to sweep in there. The bureaucracy, which again, they think, you know, partly with Ratzinger beforehand and some of his other main contenders, that is part of the problem that they want to sort of fix and change. But of course, one of the problems he has is he was sort of seen as an outsider. And as an outsider, they said, well, that's going to give him sort of the leeway to maybe make some real change, again, in the limited context of the Catholic Church, but it makes some real change. But he has to face the bureaucracy, and the Catholic Church is famous for the depth and the Byzantineness of its bureaucracy, if I can swap East and Western churches. Mm-hmm. So I mean, it will be interesting, if only from a sort of geopolitical kind of, you know, I don't care about the religion part, but how does politics play out? How he's going to do, if he's going to do anything, or whether he's going to end up sort of spinning his wheels because he's going to want to change things, but the whole bureaucracy around him is just going to make him impotent.
Well, it also depends on, I think, on the cardinals that elected him. Do they want him to be a crusading pope, or do they want him to basically be, you know, a photo op and go around in his pope mobile and wave and kiss babies or whatever it is popes do?
Well, and that, again, that I think is actually the crux of it, is, I mean, they picked him because they wanted change. Now, did they want
real change, as in, is he actually going to clean things up, or did they want to pick the poster child for change in the Catholic Church and just use him on posters and not actually have him change anything in reality?
It'd be funny if they actually did print up posters and like, the new pope.
Oh, actually, no, it's funny. I was, again, in my research for the show, they had like the top 10 pope trinkets that you can buy. Mm. So keychains and postcards and posters and... all sorts of no pope on a rope though.
That's too bad.
Yeah, pope on a no. That's Jesus.
Well, let's take another quick break here on Radio Free Thinker. We'll be back after this.
Today in the news.
Tired of the same few voices giving you the same point of view on the news? You're not alone. The Campaign for Democratic Media is a nonpartisan, nonprofit group fighting to ensure that our public airwaves represent more than just one voice. Canadians deserve diverse, accountable, and quality Canadian media. Visit democraticmedia.ca to learn how you can stand up for media issues.
Today our topic will be about Pope Francis, or maybe I should Pope Atheist the First. Well, maybe he's only agnostic, but some of the things being said by Pope Francis, well, sure as hell ain't Catholic, if you may forgive my choice of words. As an evangelical atheist, I also declare that this Pope is the most dangerous person to atheism. Perhaps for too many years, the atheist community has relied too much on the religious leaders to be also the villain types, such as Pope Benedict, or if they were charismatic, they were also crazy and hate-filled. What we must now face is Pope Francis, a likable religious figure who speaks to the people, and worst of all, on many of the most important issues facing humanity, well, he has abandoned doctrine in favor of reasonably good solutions. Pope Francis was Time's Person of the Year, one of only three popes who have received this distinction. The others were Pope John XXIII, who received this for his efforts to mediate the Cuban Missile Crisis just before his death, and John Paul II for his wish to, quote, to place the Church at the heart of a new religious alliance that would bring together Jews, Muslims, and Christians in a great religious armada, after about 15 years plus as Pope. Francis got the title just 9 months into the gig. On a side note, only one person was named Person of the Year three times, that's FDR, and a lot have been there twice, about 13, notably Stalin in 1939 and 1942. For reference, there have been 101 Persons of the Year, 12 Groups of the Year, and 3 Things of the Year. A number of atheist, secular, LGBT groups, I should note that the gay magazine icon The Advocate also selected the Pope as Man of the Year, as well as these, progressive, socialist, and other groups, poverty advocates, and many others has praised Pope Francis for his conciliatory words. The open hand that he has presented to these groups and causes that were seen to be taboo in previous papacies. In September, I think, he came out and in commenting on Jesus said that some of the church say, quote, if he is not one of us, he cannot do good. If he is not our party, he cannot do good. He then commented that the church was a little intolerant, and then capped that with, the Lord has redeemed us all of us, with the blood of Christ, all of us, not just the Catholic, everyone, even the atheist, everyone, exclamation point. He then followed it up with, if a homosexual person is goodwill and is in search of God, I am no one to judge. And just a few weeks ago, he said, the church's pastoral ministries cannot be obsessed with disjointed multitudes of doctrines to be imposed insistently. The church cannot insist only on issues related to abortion, gay marriage, and the use of contraceptive methods. He also announced at the end of the Third Vatican Council that, and I quote here, modern and reasonable religion, which has undergone evolutionary change, the time has come to abandon all intolerance. We must recognize that the religious truth evolves, changes. Truth is not absolute or set in stone. Even atheists acknowledge the divine. Through acts of love and charity, the atheist acknowledges God as well, and has redeemed his own soul, becoming an active participant in the redemption of humanity. He goes on, through prayerful contemplation, we have gained a new understanding of certain dogmas. The Church no longer believes in a literal hell where people suffer. This doctrine is incompatible with an infinite love of God. God is not a judge, but a friend and a lover of humanity. God seeks not to condemn, but only to embrace. Like the fable of Adam and Eve, we see hell as a literary device. Hell merely a metaphor for the isolated soul, which, like all souls, ultimately be united in love with God. Okay, there's a lot there. But is it me, or is he trying to redefine Catholicism? As a philosopher, I cannot help but see what he is doing is to say God, the concept, has evolved. And it's not necessarily a white, wrathful guy in the sky, but the concept has evolved over time. To embrace God is not to worship, but to not be alone. So God is a community. So essentially, he is sidestepping a lot of the logical contradictions of religion by reducing the definition of God from a more static thing, the white-haired old man, to sort of something so amorphous that God is love, that God is the absence of isolation, that it is much harder for us atheists to debate that amorphous concept. This reminds me of many conversations I've had with friends, religious or not. When asked, how can you be an atheist when you cannot state with absolute certainty that there is no God? I respond that first, the Abrahamic concept of God is logically contradictory. So although the spiritual idea of God is love are possible but meaningless, the God of the Bible is impossible by its own definition. What Francis is seeming to say, whether this is rhetoric or not, is that God is love, and that is no longer the God of the Bible, that the Bible itself is a metaphor. And by doing so, to the unenlightened, he makes God far more palatable, if no less implausible. The Pope claimed, whether we worship at a church, a synagogue, a mosque, or a mandir, it does not matter. Whether we call God, Jesus, Adonai, Allah, Krishna, we all worship the same God of love. This truth is self-evident to all who have love and humanity in their hearts. All religions are true because they are true in the hearts of those who believe in them. What other kind of truth is there? In the past, the Church has been harsh on those deemed morally wrong and sinful. Today, we no longer judge. Like a loving father, we never condemn our children. Our Church is big enough for heterosexuals and homosexuals, for pro-life and pro-choice, for conservatives and liberals. Even communists are welcome and have joined us. We all love and worship the same God. Small note, the names of God are actually all Judeo-Christian names for God. Not sure if that was oversight or a Weasley sentence. I think kind of Weasley. And yes, Krishna is originally Hindu, but in some forms of Baha'i and Muslims, they see that as the manifestation of God. To continue, he says, God is changing and evolving as we are, for God lives in us and in our hearts. When we spread love and kindness in the world, we touch our own divinity and recognize it. The Bible is a beautiful, holy book, but like all great and ancient works, some passages are outdated. The time has come to see these verses as later interpolations, contrary to the message of love and truth, which otherwise radiates throughout Scripture. In accordance with our new understanding, we will begin to ordain women as cardinals, bishops, and priests. In the future, it is my hope that we will have a woman pope one day. Let no door be closed to women that is open to men. Well, that's a lot. Let's take it apart and see what he says and what it might actually mean. The first comments were about opening the doors to the church. Let everyone in, even the gays. He says the church should not judge them. But then again, he doesn't say that it's okay to be gay or an atheist. Just don't turn them away. And this is the rhetoric that is garnering him the headlines. But is it all talk? Why would he want sinners? And he still thinks they're sinners. In a recent report, this Pope expressed that same-sex marriage, and I quote here, is anthropological regression, and that in 2010, he said that same-sex marriage is a weakening of the institution of marriage, an institution that has existed for thousands of years and is forged according to nature and anthropology. The Pope was shocked by a civil unions bill which will allow gay couples to adopt children and encourage the local bishop to denounce the law. So it seems like he hasn't really given up the whole homosexuality is bad, same-sex marriage is bad. He's just saying, let's not dwell on that because we're scaring more of them away. And then this goes to his stance on women, which is not as rosy as the one line, my hope is that we will have a woman pope one day. He stated in an interview that it is necessary to broaden the opportunities for a strong presence of women in the church. I am wary of solutions that can be reduced to a kind of female machoism, because a woman has a different makeup than a man. But what I hear about the role of women is often inspired by the ideology of machoism. So, women who wish to be treated equal are being macho. In this context, I think he's referring to overly aggressive, women acting like men. Implicitly, he's saying women are not equal to men. They are a different species or something. And he followed that up with, women are asking deep questions that must be addressed. The woman is essential for the church. Mary, a woman, is more important than the bishops. I say this because we must not confuse the function with the dignity. So is he saying that women deserve respect, but that has nothing to do with their role or function in the church? There they can be treated, if I may quote civil rights jargon, separate but equal. They get equal dignity, but not equal roles. So a woman cannot be pope, a contradiction. So much for papal infallibility. He goes on, we must therefore investigate further the role of women in the church. We have to work harder to develop a profound theology of women. Only by making this step will it be possible to better reflect on their function within the church. The female genius is needed whenever we make important decisions. The challenge today is this, to think about the specific place of women and also those places where the authority of the church is exercised for various areas of the church. So he does acknowledge the church must be more inclusive of women, but that in the eyes of God, they are not religiously equal to men. Interesting. He even makes an attempt to, quote, reach immigrants. This is a major issue, not so much in the U.S., where the only good immigrant seems to be a dead immigrant, but in Europe, the issue is much more complex, if not any less deadly. He said on the topic, racism today is the ultimate evil in the world. When Italians, Spanish, or French turn back boats of African immigrants seeking a better life, are they not like the innkeeper who told Mary and Joseph that there is no room for them in the infant Christ? These immigrants are children of God, and we are commanded to love them. Those who would dare to turn immigrants away, be they legal or undocumented, turn their backs on Christ himself. A racist is not a true Christian. He is the embodiment and personification of evil, a Satan. Pope Francis stated, because Muslims, Hindus, African animists are also made in the likeness of God, in the image of God, to hate them is to hate God. To reject them is to reject God. If that was not plain enough, he doubled down with the big excommunication, saying, those who seek to deny a home to migrants risk their membership in the church. We will consider excommunication for those whose souls willingly dwell in the darkness and evil of intolerance and racism. Satan himself is a metaphor or personification for the collective evils of mankind. Today, these evils manifest foremost as racism, intolerance, religious persecution, and bigotries of all kind. So, it looks like the entire Tea Party caucus et al. In the U.S., and likely many in Harper's cabinet, are at the risk of damnation of their imaginary souls. It is funny in a not really funny way that there is pushback on the Pope's stated stance from some prominent, perhaps self-loathing maybe, cardinals. Cardinal Arzian of Nigeria asked, what do we stand for if we declare the truth is relative? On the contrary, truth exists independent of our personal feelings. All this talk of love and tolerance is hollow if we have no identity of our own, if we stand for nothing. I charge that Francis has become a heretic, that he is not a valid pope. Indeed, Francis is no longer even a Catholic. The seat of St. Peter is vacant. The Vatican has embraced moral relativism on abortion and homosexuality. At the same time, it is embracing moral absolutism in favor of illegal immigrants and cultural genocide against Europe. Cardinal Arzine said, "Francis is a fool if he thinks his liberal immigration policy will end well. He has betrayed Western civilization. Vatican City will one day become a giant mosque if things continue in Europe along their present course. Those in the West who ignore this truth do so at their own peril." Now, on this issue, I'll give him props. So, moving on. That said, Pope Francis has emphasized in his charm offensive not acceptance of non-believers, sinners, women, but a, quote, inclusiveness. He stated many times the church needs to be less exclusive and more inclusive. He stated that, quote, "Jesus didn't tell the apostles or us to form an exclusive group, a group of elites. The Pope said, he said, go and make disciples of all nations. Welcome others as true brothers and sisters." Now, is when he starts to preach against exclusiveness that he starts to sound like a communist. Well, a strong socialist, at least. Here he states that, quote, "Just as the commandment, thou shalt not kill, sets a clear limit on the order to safeguard the value of human life, today we have to say, thou shalt not to an economy of exclusion and inequality. Such an economy kills. As long as the problem of the poor are not radically resolved by rejecting the absolute autonomy of the markets and financial speculation, and by attacking the structural causes of inequality, no solution will be found for the world's problems, or, for that matter, any problem." He really offended American conservatives when he stated that the succession of economic crisis should lead to a timely rethink of our models of economic development and to a change in lifestyle. Reiterating words you have heard on Radio Freethinker, the Pope said, "Some people continue to defend trickle-down economic theories that assume that economic growth, encouraged by free markets, will inevitably succeed in bringing about greater justice and inclusiveness in the world. This opinion, which has never been confirmed by the facts, expresses a crude and naive trust in the goodness of those wielding economic power and in the sacralized work of the prevailing economic system. Meanwhile, the excluded are still waiting." He condemned rampant individualism, egoism, and materialistic consumerism, weakened social bonds, fueling that throwaway mentality which leads to a contempt for and abandonment of the weak. So the Pope is not a free market capitalist, or one could get that impression. However, what does he propose to do about it? He says, "Effective policies are needed to promote the principle of fraternity, securing for people access to capital, services, educational resources, healthcare, and technology, and that governments have a duty of solidarity towards poor nations and a duty of social justice towards their citizens, while individuals should be practicing fraternity by sharing their wealth." Well, that's nice, but not too different from previous popes saying we need to help the poor and the starving. Francis says the rich must help, respect, and promote the poor. Francis said, "I exhort you to generous solidarity and a return to economics and finances to an ethical approach which favors human beings." Sounds like he wants the rich to help, not by making a more socialistic economy or even create a more egalitarian workplace, but by a form of charity. Pope Benedict certainly sang a different tune, denouncing Marxism as one of the great scourges of the modern age. But wait, so did Francis. He said, "The ideology of Marxism is wrong." He softened his comment by adding, "But I have met many Marxists in my life who are good people." There's a theme emerging. Francis is not so much changing church doctrine. Again, everything he has done has reinforced it. But he is soft-pedaling the rhetoric with the obvious aim of getting people into the church. Once there, believer or not, the clergy has the opportunity to convert. You cannot convert an empty pew. Pope Francis' home region is Latin America. This is insightful because it is where the modern version of liberation theology arose. Liberation theology, a Catholic phenomena on actively fighting economic and social oppression, is a fascinating place where Marx and the Catholic Church kind of overlap and meet. Though Marx was certainly an atheist, Catholics who support liberation theology understand his attempts towards religion as a nuance. He saw it as a coin with two sides, a conservative force that could block positive change, as well as a reservoir of energy that could resist and challenge injustice. Now, for those of you who are not aware, liberation theology can, in some ways, lay its origin to support Jesus, who, beyond the slavish worship of a deity, he also promoted social equality, economic egalitarianism, and the value of people. The modern version of liberation theology arose principally as a moral reaction to the poverty caused by social injustice in the American banana republics created in Central America. The Catholic Church was one of the only institutions that could stand in opposition to various dictatorships that plagued Central and South America. Among the ethical clergy, the socioeconomic inequality and the horrors that followed suit in these countries after dictators took over were intolerable, and local priests decided to use their position and privilege to resist. The most famous was Bishop Oscar Romero, who was assassinated for his support of the poor and opposition to the El Salvadorian dictatorship. Liberation theology never truly condemned liberal capitalism. This push for social economic equality was in a place where the distance between the elite and the poor were extreme, where the use of force to oppress the people politically was also extreme. This was the case where ethical, good people who happened to be priests used what tools they had at hand to help the most destitute, the most repressed. That is why liberation theology never really took off anywhere else. Liberation theology is a Roman Catholic theology which interprets the teachings of Jesus in relation to liberation from unjust economic, political, and social conditions. Now, this was condemned by traditional Catholics such as Pope Benedict and others. It was always a sect of Catholicism that was tolerated but never accepted in the Vatican. That is, until Pope Francis, or so it seems. He also stated that the process of secularization tended to reduce the faith and the church to the spheres of the private and personal. And here we may see the true message of Pope Francis and why the atheist movement should be afraid, very afraid, of Pope Frankie. If you wonder why I'm using the more pejorative name Frankie over Francis, well, it's to emphasize the duplicity of the Pope. He has created this progressive, inclusive, modern image called Pope Francis, Man of the Year. Well, really, his policies and actions are little changed from the oppressive, offensive policies of the past. The real Pope is Crude Frankie. When we look at the doctrinal stance of the Pope, we see no movement. The only change is how the Church appears to the masses. In a time that has seen increasing loss of practitioners from the Catholic Church across the globe, Francis may be trying to open the doors to people who were overtly excluded by paying lip service to openness while still maintaining the moral condemnation of these people, but just in silence. How can you convert a sinner if they are not willing to cross your threshold? Frankie has, perhaps cynically or from real convictions, proposed that you get them in the church, sinner, abomination, or other. Once in the church, you can convert them. That is a danger to atheism. He is using the makeup of populist rhetoric to hide the ugly truth that, to the Catholic Church, homosexuality is still a sin, abortion is still a sin, contraception is still a sin, condoms to prevent AIDS is frowned upon, that women are not equal to men. He welcomes the body, to him perhaps the soul, but with the aim of not embracing but converting a person. Even on poverty, there is much talk as he heads the richest institution in the world. The Vatican controls billions, perhaps trillions of dollars worldwide. And how little he has done. It's great theater to wash the feet of a poor woman, to kiss a deformed man. But to the millions starving in Africa, what does that matter? Pope Francis has made the Catholic Church sexy again, more acceptable, and in doing so he has created an opportunity for the clergy to infect the minds of the vulnerable. In the same way that Christian soup kitchens, the Salvation Army, provide a valuable social good, but with the implicit advertisement that if you want to partake in our charity, you should join our church. Atheists should be afraid because our job has become harder. We perhaps become lazy or complacent. The previous Pope's rhetoric emphasized much of the social divide, especially on topics that society has been more accepting on, such as homosexual abortion, women's equal rights, AIDS, and a number of issues. The past popes were resisting the trend not only in actions, but in words. The new pope has taken a lesson from his new former Fox News reporter, now Vatican PR head, Fox News is famous for saying one thing, fair and balanced, while actually doing the exact opposite. And it seems this has been the lesson learned by Pope Frankie. It seems the new atheist movement has elevated the battle of the hearts and minds of the world, and now the church is launching a counteroffensive. This could be very interesting and a rough year for atheism around the world. I hope that actions speak louder than words. If so, the church will ultimately be weaker next time this year. Well, I could go on, and I likely will in the new year. So, Happy New Year to all my loyal listeners. Here's hoping that 2014 will be an even better year for Radio Free Thinker, and thank you all for making the show possible and for tuning in. We're to close out the show with some classic George Carlin and his thoughts on religion. So it's goodbye, and remember, eyes open, minds on.
Religion has actually convinced people that there's an invisible man living in the sky who watches everything you do every minute of every day. And the invisible man has a special list of 10 things he does not want you to do. And if you do any of these 10 things, he has a special place full of fire and smoke and burning and torture and anguish, where he will send you to live and suffer and burn and choke and scream and cry forever and ever till the end of time. But he loves you. He loves you. He loves you, and he needs money. He always needs money. He's all-powerful, all-perfect, all-knowing, and all-wise. Somehow, just can't handle money. Religion takes in billions of dollars, they pay no taxes, and they always need a little more. Now, you talk about a good bullshit story. Holy shit. Thank you very much. But I want you to know something. This is sincere. I want you to know, when it comes to believing in God, I really tried. I really, really tried. I tried to believe that there is a God who created each of us in his own image and likeness, loves us very much, and keeps a close eye on things. I really tried to believe that, but I got to tell you, the longer you live, the more you look around, the more you realize something is fucked up. Something is wrong here. War, disease, death, destruction, hunger, filth, poverty, torture, crime, corruption, and the ice-capades. Something is definitely wrong. This is not good work. If this is the best God can do, I am not impressed. Results like these do not belong on the resume of a supreme being. This is the kind of shit you'd expect from an office temp with a bad attitude. It's just between you and me. In between you and me, in any decently run universe, this guy would have been out on his all-powerful ass a long time ago. And by the way, I say this guy because I firmly believe, looking at these results, that if there is a God, it has to be a man. No woman could or would ever fuck things up like this. If there is a God, if there is, I think most reasonable people might agree that he's at least incompetent and maybe, just maybe, doesn't give a shit. Doesn't give a shit, which I admire in a person and which would explain a lot of these bad results. So rather than be just another mindless religious robot, mindlessly and aimlessly and blindly believing that all of this is in the hands of some spooky, incompetent father figure who doesn't give a shit, I decided to look around for something else to worship, something I could really count on. And immediately, I thought of the sun. Happened like that. Overnight, I became a sun worshiper. Well, not overnight, you can't see the sun at night. But first thing the next morning, I became a sun worshiper. Several reasons. First of all, I can see the sun.
Okay.
Yeah. Unlike some other gods I could mention, I can actually see the sun. I'm big on that. If I can see something, I don't know, kind of helps the credibility along, you know? So every day I can see the sun as it gives me everything I need. Heat, light, food, flowers in the park, reflections on the lake, an occasional skin cancer. But hey, at least there are no crucifixions, and we're not setting people on fire simply because they don't agree with us. Sun worship is fairly simple. There's no mystery, no miracles, no pageantry, no one asks for money, there are no songs to learn, and we don't have a special building where we all gather once a week to compare clothing. And the best thing about the sun, it never tells me I'm unworthy. Doesn't tell me I'm a bad person who needs to be saved. Hadn't said an unkind word. Treats me fine. So, I worship the sun. But I don't pray to the sun. Know why? I wouldn't presume on our friendship. It's not polite. I've often thought people treat God rather rudely, don't you? Asking, you know, trillions and trillions of prayers every day. Asking and pleading and begging for favors. Do this, give me that, I need a new car, I want a better job. And most of this praying takes place on Sunday, his day off. It's not nice, and it's no way to treat a friend. But people do pray, and they pray for a lot of different things. You know, your sister needs an operation on her crotch. Your brother was arrested for defecating in a mall. But most of all, you'd really like to fuck that hot little redhead down at the convenience store. You know, the one with the eye patch and the club foot, huh? Can you pray for that? I think you'd have to. And I say, fine, pray for anything you want. Pray for anything. But what about the divine plan? Remember that? The divine plan. Long time ago, God made a divine plan. Gave it a lot of thought, decided it was a good plan, put it into practice. And for billions and billions of years, the divine plan has been doing just fine. Now you come along and pray for something. Well, suppose the thing you want isn't in God's divine plan. What do you want him to do? Change his plan? Just for you? Doesn't it seem a little arrogant? It's a divine plan. What's the use of being God if every rundown schmuck with a $2 prayer book can come along and fuck up your plan? And here's something else, another problem you might have. Suppose your prayers aren't answered. What do you say? Well, it's God's will. Thy will be done. Fine, but if it's God's will and he's going to do what he wants to anyway, why the fuck bother praying in the first place? Seems like a big waste of time to me. Couldn't you just skip the praying part and go right to his will? It's all very confusing. So to get around a lot of this, I decided to worship the sun. But, as I said, I don't pray to the sun. You know who I pray to? Joe Pesci. Joe Pesci. Joe Pesci. Two reasons. First of all, I think he's a good actor, okay? To me, that counts. Second, he looks like a guy who can get things done. Joe Pesci doesn't fuck around. Doesn't fuck around. In fact, Joe Pesci came through on a couple of things that God was having trouble with. For years, I asked God to do something about my noisy neighbor with the barking dog. Joe Pesci straightened that cocksucker out with one visit. It's amazing what you can accomplish with a simple baseball bat. So I've been praying to Joe for about a year now. And I noticed something. I noticed that all the prayers I used to offer to God and all the prayers I now offer to Joe Pesci are being answered at about the same 50% rate. Half the time I get what I want, half the time I don't. Same as God, 50-50. Same as the four-leaf clover and the horseshoe, the wishing well and the rabbit's foot. Same as the mojo man. Same as the voodoo lady who tells you your fortune by squeezing the goat's testicles. It's all the same, 50-50. So just pick your superstition, sit back, make a wish, and enjoy yourself. And for those of you who look to the Bible for moral lessons and literary qualities, I might suggest a couple of other stories for you. You might want to look at The Three Little Pigs. That's a good one. Has a nice, happy ending. I'm sure you'll like that. Then there's Little Red Riding Hood, although it does have that X-rated part where the big bad wolf actually eats the grandmother, which I didn't care for, by the way. And finally, I've often always drawn a great deal of moral comfort from Humpty Dumpty. The part I like the best, all the king's horses and all the king's men couldn't put Humpty Dumpty back together again. That's because there is no Humpty Dumpty and there is no God. None, not one, no God, never was. In fact, I'm gonna put it this way. If there is a God, May he strike this audience dead. See, nothing happened. Nothing happened. Everybody's okay. All right. Tell you what. Tell you what. I'll raise the stakes. I'll raise the stakes a little bit. If there is a God, may he strike me dead. See, nothing happened. Oh, wait, got a little cramp in my leg. And my balls hurt. Plus, I'm blind. I'm blind. Oh, now I'm okay again. Must have been Joe Pesci, huh?
There were other things that bothered me. Perhaps it's retrospect, you know, I'm seeing them better now. But I think I was troubled, too, at the time by the fact that my church would keep changing rules. I mean, they change a rule anytime they wanted. This law is eternal, except for this weekend. Special dispensation. Magic words. Yeah, like eating meat on Friday was definitely a sin. Except for the people in Philadelphia. They were number one in the scrap iron drive. Yeah. They would give it away as a prize, you know. If your parish gave the most money to the Bishop's Relief Fund, hamburgers on Friday. Yeah. Wow. And of course, I've been gone a long time now. It's not even a sin anymore to eat meat on Friday. But I'll bet you there are still some guys in hell doing time on a meat wrap, right? Gotta be good, yeah. I thought it was retroactive. I had a bologna sandwich. This guy had a beef jerky, right? Tell him what you had.
How would you like to do eternity for a beef jerky?
Yeah, because hell wasn't no 5 to 10, you know. Hell was later. Heaven, hell, purgatory, and limbo. Those were the four big places to go. Yeah. Heaven was the only one they showed you pictures of. Drawings, I assume they were drawings, right? Artist's conception of heaven. You'd find that in, sometimes you'd find that in Treasure Chest, the comic book with Chuck White, the Catholic comic book. Yeah, Chuck White fan. Yeah, occasionally you'd see a picture of heaven. Heaven was always a lot of yellow and white light, a lot of vertical lines. A lot of clouds, might have been clouds, might have been apartment buildings, you weren't really sure, you know. And a lot of tall angels, did you ever notice that? Except for the cherubs, all the angels, real tall dudes, yeah. And all blonde, they had far too many blondes in heaven as far as I was concerned, yeah. Hell, they never showed you any pictures of hell. Hell was real easy to understand. Hell was fire, and anyone can dig fire, right?
Yeah, hey, hell is like burning 100 Christmas trees and jumping right in the middle, you know?
Purgatory was weird. Purgatory was temporary hell. It was like it was as bad as hell, but you knew you were going home, man. Often wondered if they had, like, short time clubs in purgatory, you know? Little buttons. I'm short, 2 eons, man. Yeah. I could do an eon standing on my head. Yeah. Purgatory. The weirdest of all was limbo. Limbo was where they sent unbaptized babies. The reasoning was it wasn't their fault. Yep, can't see God if you're not baptized, but you were too young to make the decision. Whip them into limbo. What could limbo have been, man? Welcome to limbo. I think they've since canceled limbo. I'm not completely sure, but I think when they purged a few of the saints, they called off limbo, too. Yeah. Hope they promoted everyone, sent them to heaven, you know, didn't just cut them loose in space, right? Yeah.
If you wish to make an apple pie from scratch, you must first invent.
Thanks for listening to Radio Free Thinker. Remember to visit us online at radiofreethinker.com and subscribe to the podcast on iTunes. If you have any local skeptical events you would like us to mention on the air, email us at info@radiofreethinker.com.
Venture to the stars. A still more glorious dawn awaits, not a sunrise, but a galaxy rise, a morning filled with 400 million suns.
Wind.com is Vancouver's community-driven concert calendar. New shows are added daily by the city's most active promoters, musicians, and by the driving force of the music scene, the fans. LiveVan.com's listings are different because they are integrated with profiles updated by bands and business owners as they promote upcoming events. Check out the archives to see how closely we've worked within the community to put on the shows you love. Visit LiveMusicVancouver.com for the latest independent and major label event listings. LiveVan.com, Vancouver's community-driven concert calendar.
One time, ladies and gentlemen, you are now tuned into the sounds of Disorder, 101.9 FM, CITR.ca, here in Vancouver. My name is Charlie Tuna from Jurassic 5. We are live and direct. Stop playing and tune in.